Hi,
amore.
And welcome to another fortnightly episode of From the Lower Level. I'm your host, Moshi.
And I'm Patrizio, and I have one thing to say to you, Moshi.
Yeah?
Don't come for the housewives, honey. They will not end well.
Okay, Phaedra. How's everybody doing? I know it's been a little while since we did this podcast, but I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm still kind of in holiday mode. I'm trying to settle back into this like recurring weekliness of life. But if you cannot tell, we are really excited by one particular show at the moment. It is the show Patrizio quoted. It is the US version of Traitors, which is just what last week started season two.
Yes.
And normally it's me berating Patrizio for never watching like any other show who's aside from Housewives. But for the better part of a year, Patrizio has been encouraging me to get into the Traitors, and I have been rolling my eyes. But after all of the hullabaloo that I've been seeing in the blogs, all of that stuff, I was like, you know what? Give me the sneaky link. Give me the sneaky link, Patrizio. Let me watch this.
Do not incriminate me with the sneaky link. I have no sneaky links.
He has sneaky links. The people already know you're a criminal.
Just because Teresa is my auntie.
Allegedly. But I have now watched, I've just gone straight to season two of this US Traitors, and it is impeccable television. Given that, 40% of the cast are current or former housewives, we've decided that we're going to do things a little bit differently this week because we're sick and tired of talking about things that are just not bringing us joy. So we're only going to be talking about the shows that are bringing us joy. So we're going to be, sorry.
So we're going to start off with Potomac then.
Oh my God, who's even watching that?
I'm watching.
Oh, are you? Okay, good for you. Is it bringing you joy?
Actually, this week's episode did bring me joy, which was nice. It was a one in a season good episode.
I have still not watched a single episode of Potomac. It's only what I see on the little blogs. But we're going to talk about Traitors season two US episodes 1 to 4. By the time this podcast comes out, episode five, will be about to come out. And we're also going to wrap up the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City reunion. But before we get into all of that, Patty, let's hit them with a little word on the street.
Word on the street, Moshi. We start off in New York City this week. The Paper magazine had their 40th year anniversary cover, and on the front were the women of New York, Jessel and Sonia.
What a combo.
Says it all, really. Says it all.
What a combo. Jessel. You know what? I hate to say this. Like, I've kind of forgotten about New York. They're not in the zeitgeist enough. They don't cause enough drama off season.
So I don't know if you caught this week, but Andy Cohen said that they are casting for New York City at the moment, trying to get some really rich housewives on the show. And it's interesting because filming has already started. So it was kind of like a weird in the timeline of it all that Andy was sort of saying that they are casting for really rich housewives when filming's allegedly already started. So
what's he saying about these current housewives? Is it because Jenna's gone? He needs the show.
I know. What's he saying about Bryn Whitfield?
Well, okay. Next.
From the lower level.
Oh, a local story.
The local news, Moshi. I saw it in the streets myself.
Wow. You just popped your little head out and you're like, hello.
It's not word on the street. It's word straight from my mouth. I am the streets. Me and Giselle. There is a rumor at the moment that they are looking to reboot The Real Housewives of Melbourne. but cast a hell of a lot younger than the most recent cast.
So then it's just going to be influencers.
How do you feel about that?
Boring. I understand why they're trying to do it, because like Sydney had a pretty decent season, but like they should learn from Sydney that actually it works to have a nice cross section of women, and it works to have like women who are in business, like women who are doing things, or like women who are a little bit spicy.
I think I'm excited at least to know that Melbourne is on someone's roadmap. Like it hasn't been completely, you know, put into the grave. But I don't know. I think it's just that thing of like, unless Gina wants to come back, I just don't see why there's even any point continuing with the current cast.
100%. I would also, who else would I like to see? That's a good question.
If you have to think about it, Moshi.
Gina and Lydia.
Well, I think Gina and Lydia make a good, like, combo.
Yeah.
And Janet. Like, Janet's fucking rich, to be honest.
I mean, she's ridiculously rich. And she's on, like, husband number four or something. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah, and this one.
And Cheeks. Bring Chica back. Or maybe it should be, like, all of their children.
No, we're not.
Ask the daughters.
No, absolutely not. Lydia, I don't know. Do you follow her on Instagram?
I don't. Should I?
I don't know. Every time I look at her stories, just another one of her children is either getting married or having a baby. Like, I don't know
how these are your people, Patrizio.
Well, I know. And then I just can't keep up.
But that's what people do when they get to a certain age.
I know, but and then she's living her best life at the moment, skiing in Europe.
Good for her.
Yeah.
For her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
good for her, for Lydia.
Good for her.
She's on the 71st floor.
Not the 71st. I mean, Lydia for a reason.
Can I Spock? To be honest, the way that Lydia has, like, perhaps the most quotable lines, like, after Gina from Real Housewives of Melbourne really says something.
Once again, if you have never watched The Real Housewives of Melbourne, the OG, it is worth tracking down. Lydia Schiavallo is just an icon. I mean, I've told you this story 100 times, but bumping into her on, and I, like, almost literally did bump into her. She's a glamazonian. Like, she's a glamazon. I basically am waist height on her and literally almost walked into her thighs. She is just gorgeous in real life.
The other thing she was doing for quite a bit of time as well, she had Lydia's closet and she was just hawking her shit off her wardrobe. She should,
rather than sending it to a consignment store and having them make all the profit. Like, a lot, like, this is, you know, in this economy, handbags and watches are the better investments than houses. So, like, she knows what's up.
Yeah, I don't think any of it was worth buying. Anyway, let's talk about some real rich women. The Real Housewives of Miami. We got they filmed a reunion last week and we got the seating chart. So, going left to right, starting with friend of Adriana, then Dr. Nicole, Lisa Hochstein, and then Larsa to the stage left of Andy Cohen.
Stage left, yes.
To the stage right of Andy Cohen is Gertie. She's gertified the first seat next to Andy.
She made it. All she had to do was get cancer.
Alexia next to Gertie, followed by Julia, and then we have friend of Kiki and Marisol.
I'm not being mean when I say that, but, like, this woman has phoned it in every season that she's been on. I think it really does suck what she's had to go through, but the fact that, like, I don't know why they treat Miami this way. The way in Miami you need to, like, be dying for them to give you a position, a pole position. Like,
is Larsa dying?
Well, who knows? She'll tell you she is. She'll tell you that she dies multiple times a night. But even Larsa just getting the seat like next to Andy, she needs to thank Gertie for that, because she's only there because of her, you know, frenemy-ness with Gertie this season. You know what I'm noticing about Larsa? Like, she needs a man in her life to come out of her shell.
Yes. Marcus. I love Marcus.
I love Marcus, but we'll talk about that later.
Were there any other surprises? I mean, I kind of was a bit surprised that Lisa didn't get the front seat. I mean, obviously this wasn't really like the divorce season, but I kind of thought that she had enough drama going on that maybe that would snag her the front seat.
It's Gertie's cancer is top, and so then it's who's Gertie's like enemy. It's Larsa, and then they're building from there. But I thought what I really kind of love is that Adriana and Julia will not be sitting next to each other. That's different.
I think that's interesting. I think Alexia and Marisol are not sitting next to each other. And in fact, Marisol got booted to the very end of the couch.
After Kiki.
Yeah, which I think, like, look, Kiki's given a lot this season as a friend of. But, yeah, it's still very interesting to see.
Yeah. Like, we're not going to be talking about the most recent episode today, but, like, Kiki, at least for the last couple of episodes, it's been her show. I'm really curious as to why she doesn't have a mojito and if she wants one.
I think the internet keeps asking this about Adriana and Marisol as well, because, I mean, even Marisol in last week's episode, we didn't get to talk about it, but she also Correct. Adriana at the moment. Like, so Adriana in last week's episode saw Emilio Estefan recording her new track. She's obviously also going to be performing at Mexico City Pride. Mm-hmm. Like, she's got a lot going on. And again, it's sort of like, I think the discussion is constantly just like, why are, in particular, Adriana Marisol not holding mojitos? But I think it's got to be, at this point, not a choice of production, but of theirs.
Yeah, I think they have chosen. I think all three of them have chosen not to get mojitos. I'm just very curious why. I'm sure that somebody out there has had an opportunity to interview them and tell us. I should really do more research. But I know you haven't watched this week's episode. I just skimmed it. One thing that I do just want to say that is very iconic is Kiki wipes away her tears with her vibrator in this episode. And, like, no context, Kiki. Like, maybe I should trademark that. Maybe I shouldn't say that on the podcast, because that might be a new meme account that pops up tomorrow. But no context, Kiki Bath. Somebody make it happen. I'll let you have it. Like, that is so iconic. And you watch, if No Context Kiki comes in the next couple of weeks, they better tag us in everything. That's all I'm going to say at From the Lower Level Pod.
I'm feeling another reality Von T's coming along.
No. Like, just clips of the things that Kiki does.
That's how it starts, Moshi. That's how it starts.
Okay, Monica. What else is on the streets? What are they saying? What are the streets talking about?
So on the back of the Miami reunion, Beverly Hills is filming theirs tomorrow. What's your prediction for the seating chart for Beverly Hills?
Kyle is definitely still sitting next to Andy in her. She's always on the stage right. I think that next to her will be, I wonder if Dorito will be next to her, because I feel like there's some friction between them. But I think it'll be Kyle, Dorit, Anne-Marie on one side. And what I would love to see is Sutton next to Andy, then Garcelle, then Erica, then Crystal on the other side. I'm really enjoying the quad tuplet, of Erica joining the fun girls. Like, Erica's been quite fun the last couple of episodes. And Anne Marie, not Anna Maria.
But they call her Anna Marie.
Garcelle doesn't. Garcelle calls her Anne Marie.
No, they all call her Anna. Well, the rest of them call her Anna Marie.
Yeah, it's very funny. Kyle sometimes remembers her name.
I think it says a lot that they can't even remember her name.
100%. Not worth remembering.
Interesting. Okay, so my prediction is I think it would be Kyle, then Erica, then Dorit, then Anna Marie. And then on the other side, I think Garcelle, Sana, and Crystal.
You think Garcelle is getting the seat next to Andy?
I just don't think that they will ever give Sutton the front seat. I think, like, there's...
They have to. She fought so psychotically against Kyle this season. They have to.
Nah, every single time Sutton has been consistently for the last three seasons, the shit stirrer, the only one calling shit out and all the rest of it, and she has always been awarded the final spot on the couch.
You know what's different, though? Sutton is hosting the trip to Spain. I feel like this is Sutton's season. This is the season. She's making moves.
I almost feel like then maybe if we follow your plan, actually then I would put Erica next to Andy and then maybe Sutton, Garcelle, and Crystal.
Why is Erica next to Andy?
Again, because I just truly do not believe that they will ever put Sutton next to Andy.
Oh, my God. If Sutton is next to Andy, can we make a bet?
What are we betting?
I don't know. Maybe we'll take it offline.
Oh, my God.
It's something painful.
I can't, like, I want
the way,
this. Don't say that. I want this for Sutton because
yeah,
I think
cause you're meant to be part of Sluttons. You're meant to be part of the Sluttons and you're not being a really great member right now.
Can I just say as well, I saw this week that Angie is calling her crew the Stangies.
I'm a Stangy. I'm here for it.
I'm a Stangy as well. Yeah, look, I'm a slut for Sutton too, but like I think that like for whatever reason, they just hate her.
Wow. I don't see this, but okay.
Anyway, this is why we do the podcast. It'd be boring if we like said the same thing.
True.
Okay, final word on the street is we've been reporting back and forth on this. But
reporting.
Yes, I am PhD in housewife studies. I wrote the dissertation. Anyway.
Okay, Professor, let's go.
Real Housewives of Orange County started filming this week and Alexis Bellino was filming with Heather Dubrow and Emily Simpson. And it's been confirmed today that Alexis is just coming back as a friend of.
It's so frustrating because I was like so excited for Alexis to come back, but because she's she is out to get Shannon, I can't. Like I don't understand why I love Shannon Bedore so much. I just really, really do. I feel protective of her and. Oh, now I want to pull Alexis's hair out.
Because we've come to love Shannon. Like, she's got her Shannonisms. When she joined the show, she was, like, psychotic from the beginning. She was married at the time, trying to work through her marriage, and then she got divorced. I think the issue that we normally have with a lot of these housewives is they get divorced too early on, and we have no empathy or sympathy for them.
She waited.
Yeah, and Shannon's like one of the longest-serving housewives. I actually also saw that Tamra, given that OC has now started filming this new season, is now the longest-serving housewife after Vicky Gunvalson, if you just look at total amount of years rather than continuous.
I think Shannon won me over when she pretended she was dead and David's eulogy. Like,
here lies Shannon Bedore.
It'll just never not be iconic to me. Like, that woman has gone through everything. Like, her and Dr. Moon, like, all of it.
I also love sending the GIF sometimes of Shannon on her computer in the dark.
Yeah.
When I'm like, oh, this is me like researching something online. I'm like,
I think I also like that her like side hustle spin-off business is like an at-home colonic. Like, it's so ridiculous. She's like, I'm going to make this funnel and tube that you stick up your butt. But like everybody else is doing like clothing and other things. She obviously does have her meal plans, but a whole colonic. Like, this woman is insane.
She had me at 9 lemons in a bowl.
She had me at colonic.
And when she used to bury the crystals in her, like, the foundations of her home, like, she's zany, and that's what we love about a housewife.
That first house that she built, though, like, she should be an interior designer because she was very clever. Like, all of those little things that she built in the house, like, the way her brain built that, like, she has a real skill there.
And, well, it wasn't just that. Like, I feel like she should be an architect because wasn't it, like, all of it was made with, like, non-toxic materials and, yeah. Like...
She'd put so much thought into it. But that's what David does, right? He owns a construction business, I think.
Fuck that, man.
Yeah, fuck
and that. And I mean, like...
You would bang him.
For the, I know, it's... You've got a hate fuck. I just want to clarify. It's a hate fuck. Okay.
You need to use your words. So is that what you say, Mum? I just want to clarify. It's a hate fuck. When your mum's listening to the podcast, just so she knows.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, enough of the word on the street before it gets any more Patrizia After Dark. Actually, it's about to continue because we're going to talk traders. Continue. So. From the Bravo universe, we have, I think there's 6 Bravo celebrities. So we have from the Housewives, Tamra Judge, Larsa Pippen, Phaedra Parks, Sheree Whitfield. Then from the Bravo world, we have MJ from Shards of Sunset. Mm-hmm. And then by extension, we have Marcus Jordan of Real Housewives of Miami, Larsa Pippen fame.
Love that for you. Now, for anybody who is not familiar with the traders, I once described it as Duck Duck Goose meets Wink Murder, but I...
Yes! That is very specific, but very good.
Like, you have to be...
Why is one of the challenges not Wink Murder? This week, the traders will have to murder... in person.
My weeks. You're getting ahead of yourself. We need to give the people a bit of a download on what it is.
You just threw me with Wink Murder. I'm like, yes, I forgot that existed as a game. The way tomorrow in the office, I'm going to be like, bitches, we're playing Wink Murder.
Just you randomly killing all of your colleagues in the office. Okay, Patrizia has lost his mind. He's cackling away. But basically, I don't know how many people there is, like 14 or something people.
I think there's like 21 or something.
Yeah, there's like heaps of people. And in the first season, they did half like reality, people known from reality shows and then half normies. But for season 2 of the US one, they've gone full just celebs. And it's people from all different types of reality franchises. There's people from Survivor, people from The Challenge, people from Big Brother, people from Love Island, and then obviously the Bravo lebs.
Bachelor.
Or The Bachelor, true. And the idea is that one or more people are chosen as traitors, and it's their job over the course of however long this game goes for to kill the other contestants. And they kill them either through challenges that they're set, so like, you know, getting somebody to drink from a poisoned chalice, or they actually converge together every evening and they decide who gets murdered. And what I love is the way you find out if somebody died or survived is like every morning they have breakfast together and they knock on the door before they go into the breakfast room and everybody's like, who's going to walk through the door? And they're slowly doing like this process of elimination. Like the drama is insane.
Yes, and so the ultimate purpose is that through the challenges, they raise money, $250,000, to the stash. And by the end of the competition, if the faithfuls, who are the people who are not traders, are the only ones standing. They will share whatever the pool of cash prize is. But if any traitors remain, they get to steal all the cash from the faithful. So
I didn't even know that because I've never watched it
properly. Oh my God. Okay. Yes. So that's why. So each week, not only is there a murder, or each day actually, there's not just a murder, there's also a banishment. So the faithful get together in the round table to try and pick out who the traitor is, because we're trying to get to the end of the game without any traitors. Yeah, so it's treachery, it's lies, it's survivor, it's everything.
And it's the way that, like, they have to accuse when they're at this round table for this banishment, the way they have to accuse who they think is a traitor, like the way somebody was your best friend just before and suddenly they fully hate you. It has been so intense that one, like three episodes in, one cast member had to quit because they incorrectly chose a faithful, and he just felt so guilty that he ended up leaving the show. Like, this is not a show for the faint of heart, which is why putting Housewives into this show is the best thing that they could have ever done.
It's actually really good as well that they've gotten rid of the normies as well, because I think the problem in the first season was that you have these people who have done Survivor and like other game shows, or just have lived in the, you know, Bravo universe and like have fought their own demons, that the normies just like don't stand a chance against these people, basically. Yeah. So we've kind of got a level playing field. But having said that as well, even in this group, we do have the mix of like people who are like the reality TV show stars versus like the gamers, right? The ones that are coming from the challenge and Survivor and all the rest of it.
And I think it's kind of interesting because it plays on alliances, it plays on whodunits, it plays on friendships. And what I really, the way it's sort of filmed is every week, like somebody really goes out on a limb. Like some of the things just change. It's so dynamic, is what I want to say. Like things just change so suddenly on it that you're like, hang on, why do we suddenly hate this person? But I think the reason why I really wanted us to talk about it this week is I wanted to talk about the dominance of one particular housewife, who you've been seeing all over the blogs, all over the Bravo blogs, all of that stuff. And it's one Miss Phaedra Parks.
Lhasa Pippet. Oh.
Okay, I feel like Lhasa is a second MVP. We can come to talk about Lhasa and Marcus, but let's talk about Queen Phaedra.
She was made for this show.
She was absolutely made for this show. Her Southern Belle, kitschy, like, I'm everybody's friend, I'm everybody's auntie, like, Phaedra is the sort of person who could lead a cult. You know what I mean?
She does lead a cult.
Allegedly. But like her brand of quirkiness really lends itself to this because she loves to play kind of games and she is sneaky. But I think the thing that's been so interesting is that the experienced game players who are also within her traitor mix, they really underestimated her. And I think just her like brash Atlantiness is something they were not prepared for. And I think Phaedra's bark is worse than her bite. Like, and they are not prepared for that.
Oh, these people have never watched an episode of Atlanta in their lives. Like
100%. And isn't that the thing? It's like all you had to do was watch this show and you would have been prepared for her.
Yes. And I think the other thing that makes Phaedra a very good player in this game is that she is like naturally like shady and playful and like, you know.
So she comes across genuine and authentic.
Yes. Even though she's playing the treacherous character.
Yeah. I think the other thing that she's done really well is she's made herself fade into the background. So she's kind of taken ownership in the traitors without having to want to like jump into the game, whereas the others are like, I have an opportunity. I'm going to do this. I have an opportunity. I'm going to do this. And Phaedra is just like sort of sitting back and letting things happen and trying to keep her alliance in. But in episode 4, which is like the episode where Phaedra like fully threatens the other traders.
Poverty
from Survivor and Dan from the challenge, Big Brother. Big Brother. The inciting incident, if you will, is that Larsa gets voted off the island. And this isn't a spoiler, like you'll be fine. But the way it has ruined the housewife alliance, and Phaedra was not ready for it to happen. And I just want to say that, like, if I'm ever in a fight, like, I want Phaedra on my side.
Well, I don't think she cares about Larsa, to be honest. I think what she cared about was that poverty was starting to shine a light on certain people in the group. And by shining a light on housewives, it puts Phaedra under the microscope. Right? Because up to this point, like, the housewives have been kind of like moving along and no one's really accused any of them at this point of being traitors. And then somebody does bring up that point that, like, interesting that none of the housewives have been killed by the traitors and that they haven't really been under speculation either, right? So that must mean by process of elimination that a Bravo Leb, perhaps it's not the housewives because MJ's there as well, is a traitor.
No, 100%. But I think now let's talk a little bit about Larsa and Marcus Jordan.
Larsa, who is the dumbest bitch with the biggest heart.
That used to be Teresa's nickname.
Yes, it is. That was a Teresa Giudice Manzia's quote.
Did you legit just refer to Teresa as your auntie? Wow. And I almost let it slide. Okay. All right. DeLulu in the house. Okay, keep going.
Sorry. I think people like understand that Larsa is stupid. Cause like the thing is, like, I just know Larsa did not understand any of the game rules, like, moving into this, because she literally, like, the minute that they choose the traitors, she's like already accusing the person sitting next to her of being a traitor. Like, Larsa, like, what are you doing? Like, stop it. But anyway, she actually has a lot of game.
She does.
And I think it's that thing of like, one, she was looking for, like, you know, she was a woman scorned.
Like, she's a wag. Like, she can smell deceit from a mile away.
She's had to deal with these bitches. She's gone through the Kardashians, the Real Housewives of Miami.
Right.
Like, she's seen it all. The wags, as you said. Yeah, I don't know. She's been on fire. And I actually just was like so shocked to see it. I feel like we were all, like the players included, were just like shocked by it. But truly the biggest thing was Marcus Jordan, because unfortunately, as we know from Real Housewives of Miami, she can't spend more than like 15 minutes away from him. So he got dragged all the way to Scotland to be on this show. he is smart and sexy, and
I have to admit, I never understood it until I watched him like almost like completely win the game single-handedly in the second episode.
And like, yeah, like we know why Lars is doing him 5 times a night.
Allegedly.
Do you think they shared a hotel room?
Yeah.
Like post, because they all get sequestered at the each night. So they wouldn't.
I think that's why they could not be traitors. And that's why I think people are so dumb. Like, they can definitely not be traitors, because I think they have to be together all the time. It just wouldn't work.
Interesting. I hope that they're banging 5 times a night in the hotel
in Scotland just to stay warm.
Oh, it looks cold.
It is cold. Scotland. The other real highlight for me of this show is Alan Cummings. Like, I have known him from watching him on film and television in like shows like The Good Wife and like The Good Fight. And he's in one of my favorite movies of all time, which is the Spice Girls movie. And he is always so light and comedic and just great. But because he is so theatrical, like, and he's like camp as fuck. So like just all of his outfits. And I love that every day, especially the housewives, especially Phaedra, is like, we want to see what Alan's wearing. And they just like cheer him in. There is an episode where there is a death and like people get buried in a coffin alive. Like the show is insane. But just like the way that he made all the like the women put the fascinators with the things, like just the high drama and high campness of this show is fabulous.
As good as Alan Cumings is.
What are you going to say about? You're about to slander Alan Cumings. We're about to fight, aren't we?
We are about to
fight. Oh, you're going to just say, you're going to talk about the UK host, right? Oh, yeah. I mean, 100%.
Claudia Winkleman, icon, legend, the moment.
Well, she's the OG.
She is. She's just, yeah, as like, because I'm watching both of them, they're both airing at the moment. Yeah, she's just, there's something about her where she is, it's the fringe, it's the like, she's like a bit gaunt. As she like wears these like really, an androgynous kind of like goth kind of like inspired looks.
She looks like a goth. She like the eyes are very black, but she's always been like that. You see her on a lot of shows, BBC shows and things like that.
Yeah, just fabulous.
Just fabulous. And that is probably the word I would use to describe the Traitors. So I think it is showing on Peacock. And it's part of the NBC family. It is Bravo adjacent. It is Housewives adjacent. And I think if you're not watching it, you should be. And I think like what I love is like this could be your gateway drug actually to get those friends who have never wanted to watch Housewives before to watch the Housewives. Like I think this is that show.
Phaedra Parks was on Watch What Happens Live this week. Mm-hmm. And she mentioned that CT was her castle daddy.
What does that mean? I mean, he is hot and he's like rude and like, you know, that is exactly who Phaedra should be with. Cause I was asking you if like who was banging in the house.
Well, she claimed he's the castle daddy. So I don't know what that involved exactly, but apparently they got along really well.
I see it. I like they would be a great little reality TV couple actually. This is an audio. You stop.
Okay, you're telling me that this is an audio. Meanwhile, you at the start of this podcast being like, how is everyone? Moshi, we just talk to each other. There's no audience here to reply to you. You do the same thing as me.
What I'm doing is I am connecting with our listeners. You are
Moshi, you just be careful I'm not in tower tonight because I will write your name for murder.
See, once again, these little jokes make no sense until people watch the show.
So will I have to watch?
You would kill me.
I'd have you banished.
Wow. I would have you banished. On that note, I'm going to banish you. Let's take a break. And when we come back, we talk about the star of the episode, the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City reunion.
Welcome back from banishment, Moshi.
Hello. It's great to be back.
We are here to talk the reason for the season, Miss Salt Lake City herself, the Parody Housewives. It's the conclusion of the season 4 reunion. We didn't get a chance to talk last week, so we're going to sort of discuss a bit of part 2, a bit of part 3, the Bermuda of it all. Monica, whatever her last surname is, I guess like there was so much to discuss. Mary was in these parts of the reunion as well. What should we talk about first, Moshi?
Well, I just want to say that I was a bit thrown off. Initially, I had assumed that they were very much setting the scene up and they were going to run through it with every woman having a section. You know what I mean? Like they kind of do traditionally.
I thought you said the opposite. I thought you said that you thought that they were doing a chronological thing this year.
Well, that's what I did think, but I would have thought that within the chronologies, like they would have still inserted like this woman's full arc and this woman's full arc. Like I just sort of thought that was going to be the case.
Yeah, but when your arc is just a healing journey, like is that worth a segment?
No, I guess healing journeys are done.
And baths.
Or lack thereof.
It's not giving, as the kids would say, Moshi.
True. But, I mean, let's be honest. This whole reunion was the Monica show. Like, fully.
Rest in peace, Monica.
Well, we'll talk about that in a second. So, season two dove a little bit deeper into
episode two, part two, season two. Let's talk Jenny Nguyen.
Why am I even here? Like at this point,
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I know I fucked up. Oh my God, my brain. Reunion part two is what I meant to say of the season four, if you will.
Thank you. Bro.
Okay. Monica versus Linda.
I think it's funny that her name is Linda because in Portuguese that means like beautiful, but in fact she's a cunt.
How long have you been wanting to say that?
Just now.
Lies. Like that is not pre-prepared?
No, that I don't do rehearsed reads, Moshi. I'm not like Sheree or something.
Oh, not Sheree. Okay, wow. I love that for you. That was like a read and a half. She is. But I don't know if you saw this week on Twitter or X, formerly known as Twitter.
Oh, please, we are not calling it X. If Elon's going to dead name his kid, we're going to dead name Twitter as well, okay?
Fair enough. Linda is so delusional. How delusional is she? She really thinks she was a housewife this season. She's disappointed that she wasn't given a chance to be on the reunion to give her peace.
Okay, but like I just want to say for me, the biggest revelation about Linda was where Monica describes doing casting. And she says that in her like final interview or you know, screen test or whatever it was, she comes home and she's like, I really think I fucked it up. I think like I'm not gonna get this like part in the show now. And she's like, Mum, can we pray? And her mum's prayer was, dear God, please let them give it to me. Because she wanted to be the housewife over Monica. Like, talk about the Lulu.
You know what, though? I would have empathy if they weren't exactly the same. Do you know what I mean? Like, the thirst does not fall far from the faucet. Does that make sense? From the tap?
I mean, look, the apple and the tree also would have accepted.
Water does not drip far from the tap.
I think faucet is acceptable. But anyway, yes. Okay, fair. I appreciate that.
No, I just mean that, like, because of the way Monica has gone about things, I'm at a point now where, like, her and Linda, like, obviously she is so damaged by the stuff with Linda that like she's become not a great human being as well. But this, I don't know if we realize that she kind of weaponizes Linda as a way of gaining sympathy and empathy from people. Like, she has done wrong, but she will throw out a Linda situation so that we will all forget about the wrong that she's done comparatively, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Like, Linda is her scapegoat. Like, this is going to sound insane, but I don't believe, but I also do believe that that situation happened with her mom. Like, I think it is possible for Monica to lie.
I think this is the constant thing throughout this whole reunion, right? It's trying to understand, is Monica telling the truth, an exaggeration of the truth, or a lie?
I think there are half-truths and I think there are exaggerations.
When it comes to Linda and this particular story about the prayer, I'm inclined to 100% believe it because it is so insane that knowing who Linda is as a person at this point, that I'm like, because it wasn't just that she thought she should be on the reunion and that she prayed that she should be the housewife over Monica. It was also that she had like messaged production saying that she should have gone to Bermuda, like it was her family, it was this and all the rest of it. Like, I think that truly Linda was 100% like gunning for a thing. And then that whole story as well about why did Linda abandon Monica with the family in Pennsylvania or wherever it was, like it was because she was pursuing a career in TV, which again, like the irony, the layers here of like finally Linda got her wish and she was on TV in this capacity.
But my thing is that Monica has had these scenarios in her back pocket. Like, she needs them to happen in order to be able to use them to weaponize Linda as that way of getting empathy and of having people like feel sorry for her. And people should feel sorry for her, but I just think that she has done so much despicable stuff as well that I just think that she needs to stop trying to do a look over there with Linda. You know what I mean?
I mean, are you not a housewife if you don't have things in the vault to bring out at some point at a reunion or on the show and all the rest of it?
I think you can have things in the vault. My thing is that Linda is constantly going to be Monica's scapegoat out of stuff. Like, anytime you come first, she's going to be like, my mom treated me like shit. You know what I mean? Like, at some point, you need to move forward.
Okay, fair enough. Linda. Was there anything else about Linda? I mean, like, what a character.
I think just for me, it's that whole situation, like, finding out a bit more of, you know, the onion layers were peeled, so to speak, with Monica. Finding out about her dad and, like, where he is and all that stuff. I think that Andy did a really good job of giving Monica so many opportunities to gain sympathy and empathy and like have some leeway from everyone. But Monica just like did not take it properly, if that makes any sense.
So I disagree with that.
Okay, go.
I think there was definitely a lot of people who, and this is more related to part three, where they were discussing the fact that, like, you know, she was being thrown a bone several times to kind of be able to apologize or whatever. But I think that amongst the women on that stage, there was never going to be anything that Monica said that would build sympathy or empathy amongst them that would change their minds on anything. And I think Monica realized that as well. I think Monica was willing to tell her parts of her story. I think she was, you know, willing to, you know, talk her truth, as Crystal would say, obviously that might be just true for her, but whatever that truth is. And I think she also knew that, like, it was kind of like beating a dead horse. Like, there was just no point trying to convince these women anymore. I think it was done and dusted well before the reunion.
So I kind of agree and disagree. So I agree with you that there was no way that she was going to change these women's minds. But what she then needed to do is just own it and own everything without the props, without the shenanigans, and just be like, I am Reality Von Teese. I understand, like acknowledge, I understand how I hurt you. If I could go back and do it again, I would have done it a different way. I would have come to you first. I just want you to know it was never my intention for it to get to this level. That's it. And I think like there could have been something there.
Interesting. I don't know. I mean, okay, but that's, I feel like that's just like, let's continue this conversation as we talk about Bermuda.
Okay. I do want to also just call out something that happened in part two of the reunion. Monica, just in terms of Monica being out of her depth, touchette. The phrase touchette when coming up against Angie K, instead of saying touche.
Touchette, Moshi, touchette.
I mean, as much as I can't stand Monica anymore after this reunion, I did like her beforehand. I feel like touchette is going to go, like, if she does not make touchette merch, she's an idiot.
Well, she's making her swaddles. Maybe it'll be touchette swaddle.
Yeah, I don't know how that's going to go. I will say that said, Lisa did get a bit of a section in this part as well.
Can I just one last thing on Monica and Linda and kind of adjacent things?
Mm.
One thing that was shocking in this part of the reunion was that obviously there have been a lot of discourse on the social medias when the show aired about how Monica fell down the stairs. And then there was a lot of that back and forth between her and Angie about like, I'm going to sue you because there was no railing. That's why I fell and all the rest of it. I think there was a lot to unpack there. But the one thing that that was really interesting was that Meredith provided legal counsel to Monica and said, if you want to go after her, like you could get her house, right?
Allegedly.
And meaning that obviously you could sue her for an amount of money that would like, you know, impact her home. I totally believe Meredith said that.
I do as well. I wish that Meredith would just own the attorney stuff like more. Because when she goes into that mode, that's when she's fabulous.
I know.
How do you feel about, I just think that Angie K is the recovery queen, but a trampoline with eyes being described as a compliment instead of
a compliment.
It means that your skin is tight and fresh and young.
And Meredith
Angie can even say that with a straight face, Patrizio. Like, oh my God, you look so beautiful. You're like a trampoline with eyes. Like,
Angie, to me, is the MVP of this reunion.
100%. Well, I was going to ask you at the end, you're warm and fuzzy and you're prickly. So maybe, you know, you can tell us then your MVP and your MV no. But we did touch on Lisa Barlow and Jack's mission because Jack is not in Colombia. He might be now, but he was just in LA instead. And it turns out it's because he didn't get his visa approved because the picture that he submitted was him topless on a surfboard. These are not serious people.
Where were his Mormon robes?
The way Lisa is not a Mormon.
No, she is. This is Mormon 2.0.
To her, she is a Mormon. Like, not her saying all this stuff and then Heather and Whitney's contradicting her consistently. Do you know what I love? I love her confidence in being a Mormon.
I love when she was like, can somebody ask me? Because, like, I've read the Mormon scriptures.
And she said, can somebody ask me? I'm Mormon too. And it's like, Well, she went on to say that she's a Jewish Mormon, which was hilarious.
Lisa Barlow.
So a lot of this conversation around Mormonism and stuff happens when Miriam Cosby enters stage, right?
Yes. And almost falls over.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Well, she enters stage left. But Mary entering the chat was interesting, I feel like. I thought it was interesting that Andy opened up first with asking the ladies how they felt about Mary being back. And, like, Mary is just constantly on the defensive.
Yeah, because when Angie's like, it was great, she brought comedic relief. And she was like, shut the fuck up, Angie.
Yeah.
And they had to be like, no, no, she's, like, paying you a compliment.
Yeah. And then to follow that up with asking Mary who on the cast she likes. Like, Andy is fishing for shade.
Well, I actually also really enjoyed the fact that they were like, well, Andy was like, so, like, why didn't you come to the reunion, like, last time? And she had to answer to that as well, which I thought was also very interesting.
I don't know about you, but I felt like I learned a lot this season. So, number one, I loved Mary this season, and I think we as a Bravo community, except where Ramona exists, have made a decision that, like, most of these women are despicable. We've just got to accept them the way that they are because they provide us a form of entertainment. And I think there are some, obviously there's some stuff about Mary Cosby that is not great, particularly when it comes to her church. But I think one of the things that humanizes Mary is that she's clearly had an unconventional childhood. And I think there's, like, some other abuse has happened there, regardless of whether she is aware of it or not. But all of that has kind of very much shaped her view of the world. And her view of the world is fascinating to me because I think there's no room for gray in Mary's view of the world. And I think we really struggle, you know, with people who are not neurotypical who see the world in that way as well. Maybe you either see it in multicolor or you see a grayscale or you see black and white, whatever. But, like, Mary is rude by societal standards. But one of the things that I felt like from this entire season, and then particularly from the reunion, is that I felt that I really understand Mary more in terms of what she respects from people. Do you know what I mean?
Is that the Angie K of it all?
I think it's the Angie K. I think it's the Meredith. Like, she wants people to be 100% real. And I hate to say this, I think that she does a really great job of sniffing out fakeness. Like, no one has been more fake on this show than Whitney. And Mary, that is the reason why Mary can't respect her. It's the same thing as Heather. Like, Heather, too close to Jen, like, has played too many sides, can never make a decision, like, sits on the fence. Like, that is not what Mary is about. You know, I think as well with Lisa, I think she sees the persona that Lisa puts on, which I think at this point, like, I think it is just Lisa, but I think that Lisa has been Lisa Barlow for so long that she doesn't know how to be, I don't know, whoever she was originally. And I think Mary can see those things, and that is why she just cannot gel with them.
What about this tea that came out this week? That Miriam Cosby is the reason why Salt Lake City as a Housewives franchise even exists.
That's not true, though.
Huh?
That's not true.
Well, no. So the word on the street is that producers were told about Miriam Cosby, and so they go out to Salt Lake City to find her, and when they go, they find out that there are these women that are worth casting, and that it's not, in fact, Lisa Barlow that has brought Housewives to Salt Lake City. It was Miriam Cosby.
I have never heard this. This is the first time I am hearing this. Like, I am shook.
So,
I am physically shaking, Patrizio.
Yeah, and that when they, like, got a bunch of the women together, they found out after the producers had left that the women naturally just got into a fight with each other, like, at the cafe, wherever they were, and they were like, this is, like, what we're looking for. Lisa Barlow obviously was out denying this because she said that, no, her friend is the one that, you know, got it all together. And I think people need... Well, like, people on people on the internet were like, yeah, your friend probably found Miriam Cosby and then brought you in on it. Like,
that's interesting though, because it's on record. Like, Bitch Sesh, like, 2 years ago did a whole thing, and it was when Heather and Lisa were not getting along, which is why I really believe it, is because Lisa is the one that had brought Heather in, and Heather was like so shocked because she knew that her and Lisa didn't get along and all of this sort of stuff, but Lisa was always determined for Heather to be part of the show, which is very fascinating to me. I like the idea that the show could have been framed around Miriam Cosby. I think that Miriam Cosby, when she is like, when she trusts you and she's in a good place with you, I think it's really good. I think that she's like, we saw evidence of it this season, that she is somebody that will ask the questions. Like, she's not afraid because she's kind of always looking for truth. And because she's so callous and she just sees things so one-dimensional, that's where the comedy comes from, because she just lives her truth. But I think some of the stuff that she, when she does try to go a bit deeper, I just find that it always backfires. Like when she called Whitney out for being racist, it didn't land with me.
I can't say anything on this topic.
Of course you can. You can because we have always said on this podcast that everyone is racist, because racism is embedded.
Well then.
And we're all constantly working towards anti-racism. So yes, but I think what she was trying, but to say that Whitney has never done anything to her to make that has felt like it has been a racially motivated attack or anything on Mary's person. And then to just sort of say, I can't describe it to you. I'm saying this as a Black woman as well. I can't describe it to you. It's just something about you. Like, I think that Mary, like, somebody has been in Mary's ear to say, like, make this a race thing. I did think it was interesting then that she was able to pivot and she made it about Mormonism. And Mormonism and then it ended up being about all religions and how racist they are. But
Mormonism in particular is deeply rooted in racist beliefs in, like, Black people.
Not according to Lisa Bell.
Look, she has one Black friend, okay.
And the way that she said it, the way that she called out that one Black Mormon, like, that's part of the church.
Because, again, this is probably something that the church says, like, oh, we're not racist because of that one Black guy.
But, like, this is the thing about Lisa Barlow, is that sometimes, like, I'm here for when she does these things, but I don't know if she realizes the way she goes in to defend things, it backfires. It's not correct. Like, she does need to read a book. Just one.
Okay, so I have the story. So Mary Cosby is the reason it exists because NBC executive Noah Sampson said it originally came to Bravo through Mary Cosby. Someone discovered her as a great character. She was pitched and then they found other characters along with her. Once development started to dig in and meet people there, they realized it was a hotbed of unique personalities. Kind of just fell into being housewives. They went to Salt Lake with their development team and another executive, Shiona Meeks, and met all the women, and they were blown away by the casting tape they had seen. And when they met them in person, they were even better. We met everybody for drinks at a bar, and then Shiona and I left and the housewives all stayed there. And then we heard all these stories the next day where a huge argument broke out and somebody got thrown out of the bar. They were housewives already before we even started filming them.
It was probably Jen Shah.
It's probably Miriam Cosby.
Getting thrown out of the bar. I feel like Miriam Cosby would have left. One last thing that I want to say about Miriam Cosby. and perhaps like where her truth telling is just too much.
I was about to say, Moshi, do you really want to bring this up?
I do, because I think it is so fucking funny. And I think like actually, so this is where I'm like, I like Mary's like perception of the world, because I think as a parent, when you're having the conversations with your children about the birds and the bees, I think like you also need to have that conversation where you tell them not to fake orgasms. I think it's like, and especially for girls, because I think like you just go into it just thinking like, I need to please this guy. But like, it so makes sense that Mary would be walking past her son's room, hearing noises, checking in on it, and then telling that girl, like, you're doing too much. Like, he can't be that good. Like,
don't give him a big head.
Yeah. Like, I am actually just like, that is feminism. You know?
Mary M. Cosby.
That is why the
first feminists.
That is why the bras were burnt. Like, for that moment. Sister to, it was a sister to sister conversation. Okay. Can you imagine saying to your child's partner, you're doing too much? It's not that good.
My God, Moshi.
All right. I had to talk about it.
Thank God that's over.
It's done.
There were some lighthearted moments in the mix as well. The women like impersonate each other as well. Whitney is an easy target.
Yeah, but I think Angie K doing Meredith. I was not
woman.
Like, I was not expecting it from Angie. That was one of the another reason that goes into her MVP status.
And the way that Meredith just laughs at it all as well. Like, she just knows that she's made it and, like, let the women say it over and over again. 100%. She's getting royalties.
100%. But I think at the same time, the fact that they have this common enemy of Monica, they will never lose sight. So for now, they are all besties. You know what I mean? Like, they've let everything else go because it's a Monica takedown.
Well, Archangel Michael is all guiding them through this journey together.
100%. So let's talk Bermuda. We finally got there.
We got the prop. The burn book comes out.
I read somewhere online, somebody had tweeted that the moment that Monica brought out the burn book, that was the moment it was over for her.
That was Queens of Bravo.
Yes.
The burn book. I think, yeah, it was like a prop. I think the thing was, though, that it didn't add anything to the conversation.
And that's why she lost everyone. Between that and her FBI shenanigans, like, Monica, she died in part three. Like, it was like traitors. They killed her.
It was funny, though, she put Andy in the book.
Well, yeah, but she was trying to do this whole thing. She put herself in the book. Like, her whole thing was that she was trying to make it kitschy and funny, but it just came across really juvenile. Like, there is something about her, and I was listening to another podcast, Las Culturistas, and Matt Rogers said something really clever, that she is very stunted. Like, she's still so childlike. She does not know how to have grown-up arguments or discussions or debates. You know what I mean? And that's why she had to, like, the prop didn't end up being funny. Because she just she didn't even tell the joke right.
Yeah, well, I think it was the wrong pop culture reference as well. Like, it wasn't about Mean Girls. It was about, like, Gossip Girl or something.
No, but she was trying to say that they're all Mean Girls.
Yeah, but again, that's not the topic of conversation here.
Correct. That's why I'm saying it backfired on her. Like, her whole thing was that she was trying to imply that every single person on this couch has done, including her, has done something heinous. And she just, again, because she fails to fully comprehend where they are coming from, it's not hitting. But I, as I say that, one thing that did strike me when watching particularly part three is that I do think the women are overreacting with this reality Von Teese. I think, like, I don't think the level of vitriol coming in from the women fits the crime.
And I think this is the conversation to have, right, is that when we look through housewives' history, there have been housewives, Miss Phaedra Parks, who have accused other housewives of drugging and raping each other, right? You have housewives out there who have committed long-term fraud against vulnerable people in our society, right? You have, like, you know, actual just, like, racist evil people. Like, you have all of these, like, sick stories, right? And some of them, they get fired. Some of them, like, don't. And I think when we look at the Salt Lake City of it all, there's the Jen Shah, right? And again, it's season four reunion and we're still talking about Jen Shah. But she literally was arrested by the fucking FBI on TV and for some reason still gets asked to come back for another season, right? And it is that thing of what, and there was no condemnation really amongst any of these women. Like, Heather was there the day of the trial where she ends up pleading guilty. Like, it's just wild that that behavior is acceptable to these women, but Monica running this account, she's not actually the only one running an account. There are multiple people behind it. She defines her role in it as purely stalking Jen Shah and, you know, posting the videos and all the rest of it, right? She was only focused on Jen Shah of it all. And unfortunately, in this circumstance, she's the only one that has really condemned what Jen Shah has done and actually made an active effort to work against Jen Shah, right? These other women have completely just, like, gone along with it. I mean, like,
I think one of the things that they use kind of against Monica is that Monica's reasons for condemning Jen Shah were to get on the show, not because she actually wanted Jen Shah to go to the feds. Like, not because she wanted Jen Shah to be punished, but she wanted to use it as her way to get on the show.
And as you will say, Moshi, both things can be true.
Thank you. And that is the missing piece, right?
So Heather Gay was on Watch What Happens Live this week, and she literally said, like, Jen Shah owes me one for, like, finally taking down Monica for all the shit she used to post. Like, what the fuck?
How in one breath can you be saying that Jen Shah terrorized you, that you were so scared? Whitney referred to them as having Stockholm syndrome. Like, the way these women are willing to throw anybody and everybody under the bus for the mistakes that they've made rather than taking any accountability themselves. That's something else that actually really pissed me off, like, about them. And then in the next day, post the reunion, be saying Jen Shah owes you one.
It's fucking wild. And then Heather did her soliloquy on how housewives deserve to be treated with respect on social media. And I think that, again, there was, you know, a lot of, like, reasonable statements in that. But it's this thing of you can't have it both ways.
Thank you.
You can't be like, I think that we deserve to be shown respect and that no, there shouldn't be cast members that are like talking shit about us on social media and all the rest of it. And then you also, on the same hand, have her discussing what actually happened with the black eye, which we find out was that obviously like Jen Shah did cause the black eye, that they concocted this story that it was anything but Jen Shah to protect her at the time. And then we find out as well that Heather had basically insinuated that one of the producers on the show had given her the black eye. It had launched a HR investigation. So that's a serious like allegation to make, right? And it's that thing of like, how can you say Monica doesn't deserve to be on this show anymore because of this Finsta account when you have someone on the cast, the same cast, who has accused a production like worker of giving her a black eye, causing all of these ramifications. I mean, that had serious implications for this person's employment, for like a lot of things. And it goes completely, you know, by the wayside. Like Heather Gay has a hell of a lot of privilege because she's been protected to keep her in that position. If anyone should be fired at the end of this reunion, it should be Heather for finally admitting the truth and causing so much destruction in the wake of it. Like, it's outrageous. And then I think when you look at all of that and then you say she's on Watch What Happens Live defending Jen Shah again, it's like, it's fucking wild.
I am going to give you a H&On theory here, which is that Heather was presented with the fact that she was going to be fired because the truth about the black eye was going to come out, because we do know that Lisa does know about what really happened with the black eye. Like, Heather had ended up confiding in her, and I think she came in with the, I've got something better. Tanisha has given up reality. Von Teese has given up Monica. Like, I will do this thing. And as a result of doing this thing, which is going to be the biggest thing that's ever happened in Housewives at the moment or whatever, you know, they're going to keep her nice. But it, yeah, I mean, she's at this point, she's kind of like a Kyle, like the way some OGs get treated. And I know that they're the OGs of their franchise, but because their franchise is so new, I refuse to put them in that caliber, you know, caliber. Okay.
Yeah. Not the caliber. So I want to take your H&On theory and raise you one.
Love that. So QAnon, that's the next level, in case you're wondering.
Who told production first about reality Von Teese? Was it Heather Gay or was it Monica during her casting?
So I think that Monica did say, like, right from the jump, like, I don't think she said, like, I've been running this burner account, but I think she said, I have been doing all of these things against Jen Shah. And if production had put two and two together, they would have realized it was tied to reality Von Teese. Like, the fact that Heather is still close with Tanisha, and it's because Tanisha is the one that helped throw Monica under the bus.
It's just... And then, obviously, in all of this, we have found out that, obviously, Monica is not returning next season. She's been put on pause because we need some breathing room at the moment. I mean, do you see a return for Monica? Is she coming back off pause?
So it's a really interesting one because, for whatever reason, Mary really likes her and Mary is Team Monica. And I think that if... enough of the women, and I think it needs to be like Mary and Meredith and Monica, the triple M's, if you will, can come together. I think there is an opportunity for her. I think there's an opportunity for friend of. I think there's so much more to her story. I have said from the beginning she needs a redemption arc. But again, the way these women are suddenly best friends because they unite, like, you know, it's secrets. Everyone's got so many secrets, like, because they're a united front to destroy Monica. I just don't think that anybody should be put through that amount of negativity. Like, I just don't think it's good for her health to come back. Do you think she's coming back? Do you think she deserves to come back?
I think she deserves to come back. I think that she hasn't done anything that is egregious enough. You know, like I said, if we are willing to keep someone on who accused production of doing something and launched a HR investigation, if we are willing to keep someone on who was convicted of a felony of, or actually it was more than a felony, I think, right? You know, and who's been fired in all of this? Okay, like Jenny Nguyen was fired for making some comments, some racist comments on her Facebook page. Like, there just doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason in any of it. So does she deserve to come back? Well, I think she deserves not to be fired for running Reality Von Teese. I think, like I said earlier, I think she was presented with an opportunity multiple times by Andy to explain herself. I think Andy at the very end of the reunion was like, well, this was your chance to sort of say everything you want to. Is there anything that's been unsaid today that you would like to get out there? And she was like, no, because I think she knew in that moment, like, it was donezo. It's like there's nothing that Monica was going to be able to say at that reunion. And I think even if she did what you suggested, Moshi, which was, you know, hey, you know what? I ran this account. This was my motivation behind doing it. I should never have done it. And, you know, was that the reason why I wanted to be on the show? Yeah, it was. And come clean about it all. I still think that people like Lisa Barlow and Heather Gay would have found, like, a reason to hate her. They would have found some receipt that, like, somehow, you know, goes against what she's saying. Like, it's just there was no coming back from any of this, unfortunately. I think what will happen is they'll start filming next season, and much like Miriam Cosby, Monica will have to come back and save the show. Like, they'll bring her in after 6 episodes.
Well, they did say that she can come back in as a friend of. Interestingly enough as well, her countersuit against Beautylab and Laser was completely dismissed. So, you know, I'll be interested to know if Heather's going to continue to go ahead and sue her.
I think she will. I think obviously Monica's countersuit, and like, I'm putting my Meredith Marks at law hat on here, Moshi. Her countersuit was purely in retaliation of being sued by Heather Gay.
But she doesn't have, like, I never understand suing people who have nothing. Like, I don't mean that, like, she doesn't have anything, but I mean, like, what are you going to get from suing her?
Because, well, she, sometimes it's not about cash, it's about the principle.
But I just think that in justice. This, I feel like justice has been served. Like, Monica is embarrassed, right? Like, we know the reason that she skipped out on the bills that she owes Beautylab and Laser, because she didn't have the money. Like, it's, you know what I mean? She's trying to keep up with the Joneses and it's not working.
I think she's also just like a bit of like a professional swindler. I think that she kind of like, I think a lot of this stuff, it's like in the whole, like, you know, how she was like working for the FBI, like trying to catch Jen Shah out, like drink driving and all the rest of it. I think it's all part of a game. She's sort of like, how many like injections can I get before anyone notices that I haven't paid the bill?
You see it as part of a game, but I truly see it as like a part of a mental illness. Like, she's so damaged by her mum. She's crying and starved for attention. Like, she will do anything she can to, you know, be seen as the good person, to be in the limelight for doing the right thing. Like, it's like, she is very damaged.
Well, Moshi, I didn't say, I called it a game because I wasn't wearing my Dr. Tiffany Moon lab coat and I didn't feel I was qualified to make those diagnoses.
I have no qualms about making those diagnoses. On that note, diagnose your warm and fuzzy and your pricklies for the season with Real Housewives of Salt Lake City.
My warm and fuzzy, Moshi, it's no surprise. Opa, it's Angie K, my Greek goddess, the Corinthian pillar of the Salt Lake City society. She brought us Greek Easter. She brought us a gay husband. She brought us a Greek priest. She brought us fashions. She brought us sunglasses. She brought us bonnets.
Yeah.
She's a meme. She's the moment. I just think that Angie K like owned it at the reunion. I think she, you know, really stood her ground. I think that she got a lot of crap from some people watching the show, and I think she's come out the other side a winner. So she's my warm and fuzzy.
Who's your prickly?
My cold and prickly is Heather Gay. I think that her behavior in terms of this whole black eye incident, and just the double standard against Monica. Like, I don't think any of us are like team Monica. But it was shocking. And I think that was like the craziest part of it. And just how hard she's gone for Monica. It was just like, girl, where was this energy when a felon was sitting across from you? Just tells you all you need to know about Heather Gay, I think.
Yeah. I would piggyback off those warm and fuzzies and those cold and pricklies. So mine, warm and fuzzies, Maryam Cosby, because I think she is fascinating and I think she deserves to be around people who aren't fake so that she can just like live her best life and do what she needs to do. I'm not going to go as passionately as you did. But my prickly is my prickly every episode is Whitney. Like, I will never understand her.
Well, I hope you can heal from that.
I'm on a healing journey.
If next season is another healing journey from Whitney, girl, you're in danger.
You're in danger, girl, 100%. Well, speaking of danger, let's end the podcast now. We will be back at some point. You coming back next week?
Next week, I'm here. Okay,
Patrizio's back next week. Follow us on Instagram at From the Lower Level Pod. Loving all the engagement that we're getting with our curated list of stories that we like to publish for you. Slide into our DMs. Let us know what you thought about the season. Like, who are your warm and fuzzies and who are your pricklies? Like, we want to know.
Moshi, it's the last time I'm going to say this season. Bye, baby gorgeous.